Hello, today I'm going to be talking about family mediation. And those of you who know me know that I'm a practicing family mediator and have been for several years, as well as being a divorce coach. Now, I'm really passionate about family mediation, but from the get-go, let's just make one thing clear. Family mediation isn't suitable for everybody, and you need to check with yourself, possibly with your GP, possibly with the police, depending on your circumstances, as to whether family mediation is or isn't suitable for you. Now, there are certain circumstances that will give you an automatic right to avoid going to see a mediator for the first initial meeting that is called a MIAM. And if you have been experiencing domestic abuse and that has been recorded by your GP because you have an IDVA, because you've been involved with police liaison, then they will be able to write a letter for you excusing you from going to the MIAM. And I'll talk more in this podcast later about what a MIAM is. So if you can get an exemption through self-certification because you're in that circumstance, all well and good. If, however, you're in the situation where you don't have that evidence because you maybe haven't ever told anybody about it, don't worry. That's actually very common. Your mediator, when you go for your MIAM, will do some safeguarding checks, and that's a check to ensure that mediation is safe for you. If they think that mediation can be made safe for you, they will invite you to mediate, but it will always be your choice. If they feel, however, that because of the circumstances that you've outlined, that they couldn't protect you either in the mediation session or outside of the session, then they may deem that family mediation isn't suitable for you. And in that circumstance, you will be given the necessary forms filled in to say that you're excused from doing mediation. Remember that mediation, however, is always a choice, even if you don't fall into that category, or the mediator says that they feel that mediation is suitable for you, you can always say no. Now, there are lots of benefits to doing mediation. They're emotional, they're financial, and they're also to do with time. So if you're thinking about applying for a financial order on divorce, or you have children and you are thinking about making some arrangements for them, and you and your husband have been unable to agree them by sitting down and chatting together, you can use family mediation. Now, how you find a mediator is that you Google Family Mediation Council, find a local mediator, and you will get a list of the mediators in your area. It's usually best to find a mediator, if you've got finances to deal with, who are resolution members. That's www.resolution.org.uk. Now, resolution members are very pro-mediation, and even if you use a lawyer mediator, although the lawyer mediator can't give you specific legal advice, because no mediator is allowed to give you legal advice, they will be able to give you the benefit of their experience. So the legal information that a mediator gives you will be based on their actual practical experience and not something that they've just learned. So why would you mediate then if the mediator can't give you legal advice? Well, mediators can give you legal information, and the difference between legal advice and legal information is actually very subtle, and it's this. Legal information is what the law is, how it works, and the options available to you. Legal advice is all of that, plus a recommendation about what you need to do in your specific circumstance. Now, often you'll make that decision yourself, because if you go to a solicitor for legal advice, they will give you all the legal information, tell you what the law says, how it works, how it applies to you, and the options that you have. They will give you some advice about what they think you should do, but the decision will always be yours. In mediation, you will get the information, you'll be told what the law is and how it works, and the options available to you. You'll just have to make the decisions yourself. But the beauty of mediation is you can hear those options, think about them, make some decisions, and then go and get legal advice about them. that will be quicker and a lot more less expensive, a lot cheaper as well. So that's something to bear in mind. If, however, money isn't particularly an issue, you might want to find a mediator if you've got child arrangement issues, who is also a CAFCAS officer. So there are plenty of court and family welfare officers or CAFCAS officers who give information to the court about what should happen to children, who are also mediators, so child specialists. But it's worth asking when you phone a mediation company to ask them what their backgrounds are so that you get that flavour. But ultimately, it's important that you get on with your mediator and you feel comfortable with them. So when you've found a mediator, what do you need to do? Well, you'll be invited to a MIAM, which is the Mediation Information and Assessment Meeting. And the MIAM takes between 30 and 45 minutes, possibly up to an hour, depending on the nature of your relationship breakdown. And the mediator will have some paperwork that they have gathered together. Each mediation firm has their own versions of the forms, so there isn't a standard form that I could show you. But they will ask you, obviously, your contact details and the contact details of your soon-to-be ex-husband. They will ask you whether you wish to discuss children matters, property and finance matters, or all three. They will ask you to briefly outline what your issues are, but you won't go into detail. So you might say, well, we're getting divorced, we've got three children, we can't decide how we're going to manage them. We're in dispute about whether we should sell the family home. I would like to ask for spousal maintenance, for example. And they'll just be listed, and that's all. The mediator will then go on to explain to you what will happen in an actual mediation session. So they will explain about how you arrive at the session, that if you want to be in the mediation room on your own in advance, there can be an arrangement for that. They will talk to you about the process, the agreement to mediate that you'll be asked to sign, so that you both understand the purpose of mediation, the limits of mediation, the need to be open and honest, the need to be transparent. That's the mediator needs to be impartial, and that mediation is always a choice, and that you're free to leave mediation at any time, either during a session or if you've done a session, you don't ever have to go back. It's entirely up to you. So the mediator at the MIAM will explain all this to you and ask you any questions that they feel is relevant based on what you've said, and equally will give you the opportunity to ask questions of the mediator. They will check, as I say, that mediation is safe for you and go through the fees. They will also check whether or not you qualify for public funding or legal aid. So legal aid for mediation is still available based on your financial circumstances. And this is different from the kind of legal aid you might get for the divorce process itself. The test is different. So if you think that you are on either a low income because you're on benefit, or you don't have a lot of equity in the house, even if you own it, and you have less than £8,000 worth of savings, of stocks or shares, not pensions, that's a separate thing, then you may be eligible for public funding, and the mediator will go through that form with you. You will be asked to take with you a letter from the benefits agency that's dated no more than 3 months previously. If you're working, 3 months pay slips, 3 months bank statements of all the accounts that you have to make sure that you don't have more than £8,000 worth of savings. And if you satisfy them that you are on a low income and doing the formula that the legal aid agency apply, which can't go into for the purpose of this podcast because it's a little bit more complicated, they will tell you whether or not you're eligible for public funding. If you are, then the whole of the mediation process, the MIAM and all the sessions plus the MOU will all be free for you. Your partner, if he wouldn't be eligible in his own right, will get the MIAM that he will need to do for free, and he will also get one session of mediation for free. So that's 2 hours mediation. So he's going to save himself, on average, about £300 if you qualify for public funding. And of course, he may qualify in his own right, in which case mediation will be free for both of you. So once you have done your MIAM and you've assessed your eligibility or not for family mediation, if you have to pay privately, the mediator will explain how that works, and costs vary up and down the country and from organisation to organisation. Now, in my experience, the not-for-profit organisations tend to be cheaper. However, the officers that work there are great, but they tend to be less experienced than lawyer mediators. So if you have complicated financial matters to resolve, you will be better off spending a bit more money and going to a lawyer mediator who is still practicing to get the information and support you need based on real-time case law and current practice within your local court. It will cost you more, but it will save you money in the long run. Once you have decided whether or not you wish to mediate, if you do, the mediator will chase up your husband with his invitation and have exactly the same meeting with him as they've had with you. So you can do this meeting together, and sometimes that's cheaper. Some organisations will allow you both to go together to do it. They will have a quick 5 minutes with each of you on your own to do the safeguarding checks. But it's more usual that you will go separately from your husband. Your husband will complete exactly the same paperwork, have exactly the same conversations with the mediator that you've had, and will also make a decision about whether or not he wishes to mediate. Now, if he decides not to mediate, even if you wanted to, or he doesn't turn up for his MIAM, then the mediation service will contact you and tell you that you're now eligible to bypass the mediation process because your husband has not engaged or doesn't want to. So if that's because you need to make a child arrangements order, you'll be given a signed copy of the C100A, which will allow you to proceed to court. If you need to apply for a financial remedy order on divorce, that will be a signed copy of the Form A, allowing you to go straight to court. Now, hopefully, if it's safe for you to do so, you and your husband will find yourselves in mediation. The average number of sessions, and it does vary, is about 4 or 5, and they usually last about 1.5 to 2 hours each. Sometimes they last a bit shorter, sometimes, but very rarely, a little bit longer. In your first session, you and your husband will be together, usually in the room. There is something called shuttle mediation, where you and your husband are in separate rooms. And this is doable, but it's usually not very successful. And the reason is this: although it might feel more comfortable for you to be in a different room to your husband, the mediator has to talk to you. You have to tell the mediator what you want to say. The mediator then has to leave the room while you're sitting there by yourself and try and repeat as best they can what you said in the way that you said it. Now, something, of course, is always lost in translation. So it takes longer, and usually the full meaning of the conversation is lost. The bare bones of it will be there, but it's not the same as sitting in the room with somebody and having a conversation with them. So it's something to bear in mind. You might want to do it. I, as you can tell, I'm not a fan, because in my experience it doesn't work very well, but it might be an option for you. But let's suppose you and your husband are in a room together. The mediator on that first session will run through the agreement to mediate, which is kind of like an informal contract where you agree that you will listen to each other, that you will be patient with one another, that you'll put each other's needs and the needs of the family first, that you understand that it's confidential, that you understand that the mediator is neutral, impartial, so won't side with either one of you and won't give you legal advice, and the costs. So if at that stage you're happy to proceed, the mediator will then, usually using a flip chart, ask you what topics you would like to raise in the whole of the mediation session, not just in this the particular session that you're in, so that we can get a list of all the things that over the next few weeks or months you want to talk about. And again, like the MIAM, this will just be a list of headings, not going into really great detail. So for example, and it doesn't matter which of you goes first, because you'll both get an equal opportunity to speak. It might be, I'd like to talk about overnight stays with the children, or I'd like to talk about putting the house on the market, or I'd like to talk about spousal maintenance. So we have just a list of the topics. And then when we have a list, which we can always revisit, we will say, okay, are any of these topics really pressing today? So for example, examples from my own practice have been, dad's come to mediation, he hasn't seen the children for a while, he'd like to. So even though money needs to be talked about, it's really important that dad reestablishes his relationship with the children. So we talked about that first. Another one was a couple who had separated, and the husband had stopped paying the house insurance, and the wife had only just found out that the house actually wasn't insured. And so we talked about that as a matter of urgency, because if anything obviously happened to the house, then they'd both lose out because he was on the mortgage and she was living in it with the children. So we just take a topic and we talk about it until we either reach a point where we've got a partial resolution, a full resolution, or points to ponder, to go away, think about, to either think about ourselves or to go away and get legal advice. So the beauty of mediation is that in between the sessions, if you want to go and see a solicitor and say, my husband and I are in mediation, we've been talking about pensions, and these are the interim proposals that we've put forward. What do you think about it, Mr. or Mrs. Solicitor? Can you tell me? And they will give you some advice, and then you can go back to the mediation session and continue. So you've always got that benefit, and you can wait till nearer the conclusion of the mediation sessions if you wish. The mediator will always let you know if they feel that you would benefit from legal advice at any particular stage, because remember, the mediator can't give you that legal advice. So mediation isn't like counselling. You won't be going every week. You may not even go every 2 weeks. In fact, you might go about once a month, but it will depend. The mediator will usually give you a list of tasks to do at the end of every session, and you'll be given a written session record at the end of each meeting, which will be sent out in the post to you, usually with your bill. So it might be a couple of weeks before you get it, to remind you of the things that you've talked about and any interim arrangements that you have proposed, and any action steps, tasks before the next session. The benefit of this document called the session record is twofold. One, it reminds you about the things that you talked about, because sometimes there could be as many as 6 to 8 weeks between sessions. And two, it's to check the mediator's understanding of the things that you've said. So you'll be familiar, won't you, with saying something to your husband and saying it in such a way that he completely misconstrues what you said. And he'll say, well, you use these words. And you'll say, well, yes, I used these words, but what I actually meant was this. And you'll rephrase it. That is the benefit of the session record. So you might look at it and say, well, Mrs. Mediator, I did say those words, but you've taken it out of context. I didn't quite mean that. And it gives us the opportunity to go back and just clarify points at the beginning of the next and subsequent sessions. So in between times, there'll be tasks for you to do, and you may leave that very first mediation session with another date to come back on, or it might be that the mediator says to you, we'll go away and get these tasks done. And as you get closer to getting these tasks completed, for example, it might be your pension CETVs, your cash equivalent transfer values, which can often take some time. Give me a call when you're both ready to come back, because there may be no point in you coming back and it'll be a waste of your money and their time if you're not ready. So mediation is always driven by you. The mediator there is really to facilitate a conversation between you and your husband. The mediator will make suggestions if you get stuck, based on their own experience of things that have worked for people in similar situations to yourselves. But mediation is a venue where you get to make and be responsible for all the decisions. So even if the mediator does decide does suggest something for you, if you decide to go along with it, that is on your head, so to speak. That is your decision. And that's why towards the end of the mediation process, the mediator will be recommending that if you haven't done so already, that you go and see a solicitor to run by them the things that you've been talking about and the interim agreements that you've been making. Once you've covered everything in mediation, and it's usually 4 to 5 sessions, something like that, sometimes less, sometimes more, the mediator will draft a document called the Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU. And the MOU is a document which outlines the principles by which you and your husband mediated, headline subjects such as who you are, how long you've been married, any children, the jobs that you do, the money that you earn, the issues that you brought to mediation, and the resolution that you found in mediation. So it could be Mr. and Mrs. Smith have been married for 20 years. They have 2 children. Both are in full-time employment. They own a family home. The equity in the family home is £200,000. The children are about to go to university. They've been separated for 6 months. They both wish to be fair to each other. They'd like to have a clean break, i.e. no financial ties towards one another, and to be amicable. And that document will then form the basis of the consent order in your divorce. Now, the Memorandum of Understanding isn't a consent order and it needs to be legally drafted. Now, if you have used a lawyer mediator, the lawyer mediator will tend to draft the MOU almost identically to a consent order, which means that it's a very quick and easy job for a solicitor to draft for you, which again will save you some money. If you don't use a lawyer mediator, they will do you an MOU and it will be absolutely fine, don't worry about it, but it will take the solicitor a little bit of time to put it within the legal framework that needs to be. But you know, don't worry about it. If that's what you've done, it's absolutely fine, that there'll be no sort of detriment to you. It will just take a bit longer, which means it will cost you a bit more money. So that's the MOU, and it's that document that becomes the consent order. And of course, it isn't legally binding. If you finish the mediation process with an MOU and you just leave it, well, it's just a promise between the two of you about what you want to happen. For it to have legal effect, you must get a consent order through the courts. And so that means going to the solicitors and getting them to draft that for you. If you decide, based on the information that the solicitor gives you, that you don't want to agree to the things that are written in the MOU or Memorandum of Understanding, you're completely free to change your mind at any time up until the court pronounces the consent order. You may choose to go back to mediation if you want to. So that's family mediation in a nutshell. I hope that you found that useful. As you'll be aware, I'm a great fan of mediation. When it works really, really well. It's not suitable for everybody. If you can use it, do use it. If you can't, you can still conduct yourself in your divorce with the same principles that you would find in the mediation room, being open and honest and fair, getting the support you need from a solicitor if you are experiencing domestic abuse. So that's it. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and I'll speak to you next time. Bye-bye.